It's not much of a secret that I have a home field apparel problem. Even before we started this show, I couldn't even step foot on a new college campus without making sure there was something from that school's home field collection waiting on my porch when I got home. So we are, understandably, over the moon to partner with Home Field this season to keep Pitt fans comfy, cozy, and stylish at a fraction of the price by using promo code LOYALSUNS for 15% off your next order. This discount applies site-wide and with unique vintage collections for every school from Pitt to Bama, Jackson State to Colgate, Michigan, Marshall, Marquette, and both Miamis. There's something for every fan. So whether you're buying for a Pitt fan or for a loser freak, use promo code LOYALSUNS at homefieldapparel.com to save big on your next order. Each code applies once per email address, so get those work emails and burners ready. That's homefieldapparel.com.
Hello and welcome back to the Loyal Sun Show. That's at the Loyal Suns on all of your social medias. Follow us here and follow us there for Pitt sports content you will not want to miss. If you love firing Cignetti and hate historically bad seasons, this is the place for you. The Loyal Sun Show, a safe, sunshiny place for your Pitt athletics fix. Your Pitt football Panthers wrapped up an abysmal season on Saturday, losing by some number of points to the Duke Blue Devils in a result that I think we all saw coming, but none of us will soon remember. It has been a massive letdown of a season, and frankly, I don't think anyone was expecting it to get as bad as it did, and boy, did it get bad. Now, I don't think any of us really want to get into the X's and O's on that finale against Duke. I don't know if the three of us paid enough attention to it to speak succinctly to it. But I think we have come here today to talk about one thing, to answer one question that has been on Panther Nation's minds for the last 3 months, and that is, where did it all go wrong? I'm joined today, as always, by Squid and Dylan. How are you guys doing today? Apologies for the long intro.
No, it was needed. We got to get to the root of all the problems that we're having and have had. So I'm ready to dive deep into this like miserable pit of bad things that we're going to revisit.
How was your guys' Thanksgiving? I'd like to catch up with you guys first before we dive into this.
Good. I've eaten like such a piece of shit the last week. I skipped lunch for health purposes, and I'm getting like the shakes because I need saturated fats immediately. I think I'm in withdrawal.
Yeah, great day of laying around with the fam, falling asleep after eating a ton of food, putting a shift to defending Kenny Pickett, and that aged well. So at Christmas, hopefully we'll revisit all of those discussions and be like, hey, not so bad after all, huh? But yeah, we're not talking about the other team today. How was yours, Dylan?
The other prominent offensive coordinator firing that happened in Pittsburgh to the cheers of many.
Yeah, good Thanksgiving. Took a little trip up to Cleveland, got to see LeBron play Saturday night. So that was big time. So as you may imagine, I didn't spend much time focusing on the 3-8 football team, the 3-8 Pitt Panthers. Believe it or not, there weren't a ton of TVs airing the Pitt Duke game on Saturday at noon.
Dylan, please. 3-9.
3-8 at the time of the game start kicking off. But yes, they are now 3-9. Correct. Okay, we've stalled enough. Glad to be back with you too. Yeah, so where do
Always
we
a
start
pleasure.
there?
So, brief explainer for the audience. We're going to do things a little bit differently today. We're going to tell a story. The story of a program that was very seriously onto something, and then fumbled the best momentum it's had in decades. Momentum that it, well, I don't want to say very easily, but by taking the correct and logical steps, could have built a foundation to something. 9-10 win seasons every year, packed Acrisure Stadium, maybe even, you know, get enough people interested and enough wallets open to get an on-campus stadium and backdoor into a 12-team playoff in the next decade. These were all realistic goals for the Pitt Panthers after the 2021 and even in part after the 2022 season. However, as I'm sure many of you are aware, those dreams seem light years away. Walk ourselves through the major events of the last 2 years that, you know, hindsight 2020, we now know were turning points in the destruction of this program and its momentum. And I think it only makes sense to start with the highest high point. That is December 5th, 2021. Do you guys remember that date?
Very well.
Like it was yesterday.
Kenny Pickett, fake slide. The stout Panther defense absolutely ripped Sam Hartman apart on the path to Pitt's first major conference championship, the 2021 ACC championship. A day unlike any other.
What a glorious day it was.
Do you remember light years away?
Do you remember the joy and hope you felt on that day?
Nothing could have stopped us. We were going to run it back the next year, and the year after that, and the year after that.
Do you remember that sentiment though? Everyone was kind of on the same page of like, yeah, we are losing Kenny Pickett, but hit the lottery in the portal, and everybody that is on this team right now is going to be on the team next year, except for Kenny.
Yeah, it was like Kenny and Damari Mathis were the two guys, significant guys we were going to lose. I'm sure we're disrespecting someone out there. Like John Petrushin was gone. He was a big part of that 2020
Lucas Kroll
championship. Lucas Kroll. So there were guys missing, but it was also like, okay, we lose Lucas Kroll. Gavin Bartholomew stepping up into the mix. We lose Damari Mathis. We have a stable of very capable cornerbacks behind him. So it did feel like the guys we were losing would be fairly easily replaced. And like you said, if we could hit a home run in the portal, then it was going to be 2021 all over again and a chance to be built on and maybe even be better than that 2021 season. How foolish that sounds.
The phrase of the offseason was, we don't need him to be Kenny Pickett, about Keaton Slovis or Nick Patty, whoever won the job, but I think everyone knew it was Slovis. We'll get to that. But we said we don't need him to be Kenny Pickett because everyone else is going to be so good. We're in such a good spot with where the roster's at. We just need like a above average quarterback play, get the ball to the playmakers, the defense will do defense things, and we'll be fine.
Right. I mean, whoever was filling in for Kenny Pickett was getting his entire starting offensive line. Remember when that news was announced, we threw a little party in our heads. A Biletnikoff winner and Pitt's second leading receiver. Three leading rushers and the entire defensive two deep minus Petrushin and Mathis. That is the team that the next quarterback would inherit. And we were riding high. We were feeling good, so much so that 2 days later, December 7th, 2021, to the surprise and chagrin of pretty much no one at the time, Mark Whipple announced that he was resigning from the program.
Yeah, and I think at the time, there might have been a bit of surprise that he ends up taking the Nebraska job. I thought a lot of the chatter that we heard was Whipple was going to ride off into the sunset, wins his ACC title with Golden Boy Kenny, and he was going to retire more so because of, not that he didn't want to coach anymore or that he didn't like Pitt, but I don't know. It was kind of understood that he and Narduzzi didn't get along. Him and Kenny were a package deal to get Kenny for a fifth year. Narduzzi put up with it, but everyone had an idea that that would be his last year with us. So it wasn't a shock when he left, but we felt like with all of those pieces that there was a very good opportunity to go find a competent replacement, maybe even an upgrade in the coaching search.
There are some things that might get twisted in hindsight. This isn't one of them. I don't think anybody at the time was heartbroken about Whipple leaving, despite how good the offense was. Everyone just would say it took 3 years for this offense to get where it was. And yes. Was it Whipple or was it Pickett and Addison? So whenever he left, it's like, thanks, but we'll be okay. And I think we have a whole laundry list here. You guys can't see our notes here, but it's like a CVS or Giant Eagle receipt of just items of things that went wrong that we'll touch on. I think we can all agree this is probably one of the most consequential ones, if not the most consequential item. Whipple's gone. How do we replace him? We talked about how we were riding high with the roster. You just need a pretty good quarterback and a pretty good coordinator, and you're probably chilling it. Pretty good seasons for the next couple of years at worst.
I don't know how consequential losing Whipple was for all the reasons
replacing
we met.
Whipple.
Exactly. Replacing Whipple, that's where things started to get hairy. So you could say that Mark Whipple leaving was the first major domino to fall in. Well, that led to what we had to watch this season. So Mark Whipple resigns from Pittsburgh, next day signs on with Nebraska. We are not surprised by his departure. We are surprised that he immediately joined Nebraska. But hey, we're feeling good. We have a major bowl game coming up. No one was that crazy about Whipple anyway. And the portal is opening up. And exactly 2 weeks to the day later, Pitt lands its biggest target in the portal in USC's Keaton Slovis, December 21st, 2021.
There were people who, you know, it was exciting, obviously. I don't know if anybody was like, yeah, we could have gotten this guy who would have been better. Because if you look back in hindsight, some of the other options barely even played. So
I have some names here if we want to just go
Chubba
through.
Chuba Purdy is the one that sticks with me the most.
Mm-hmm.
So Purdy was the one I think most commonly associated with Pitt. And he was kind of that guy that we figured we were going to get until Slovis's name came into the mix. I'm just going off of 24/7 sports transfer rankings. Now, when I go through this, I don't want to come off as I'm saying that we could have landed all of these guys if we would have tried for them. Number one on the list, Caleb Williams, went to USC. That was part of the Lincoln Riley thing. We were never going to land him. Quinn Ewers from Ohio State to Texas, that seemed like a foregone conclusion. Jackson Dart from USC to Ole Miss. Spencer Rattler to South Carolina. Cameron Ward to Washington State. He had a pretty good statistical year this year. Not much there. Dylan Gabriel to Oklahoma. Max Johnson to Texas A&M. And then Keaton Slovis comes in. What is that? Ninth on this list of best transfers. So Pitt went out and at the time got a guy who was pretty highly regarded in the transfer portal. And
I remember hearing reports that Notre Dame wanted Slovis and he chose Pitt over Notre Dame. The other name I'm remembering now is Zach Calzada.
Yep.
He had one good game and beat Alabama, and I don't think he played since.
I forgot to look up what Zach Calzada is up to, but it's nothing significant.
He's an Incarnate Word,
which is where Cam Ward transferred from.
Correct.
What a fun
that is FCS football.
Correct.
Whole point being, we did about as well as we could have done. getting like a top highly regarded guy in the portal. So
wait, I have one more fun name that we were keyed in on before Slovis. And he plays in the MAC now. That's Connor Bazelak, who had a halfway decent freshman season with Missouri, got passed on by Pitt and has just kind of like pinballed around. So the options were not like the other guys we were talking to ended up being worse than Slovis somehow.
I remember watching the Peach Bowl and they kept like hinting at you're going to have Keaton Slovis next year. And it was like a very cool thing to be a part of because as Pitt fans, we never experienced being that high and having that high of expectations, having national media saying you're getting this stud quarterback.
So can we get to the next step in the process or?
Well, quick question. At the time, did you guys have any general consternation about us finding a quarterback before we found an offensive coordinator? Or did that not come until we found an offensive coordinator that ran the opposite scheme?
I will say that I don't think even when we hired the new offensive coordinator, I was all that worried at that point. But getting ahead of ourselves, no, I thought it was we were drinking the Kool-Aid. Keaton Slovis called Kenny, asked him about Narduzzi. Oh, Narduzzi's going to hire you a good OC. He got me Whipple. Look what happened to me. He's gonna take care of you. Don't worry about it. And Keaton Slovis drank that Kool-Aid too, and he ate it up. And I don't blame him. He was talking to a guy who was about to be the first quarterback taken in the next year's NFL draft, a guy who just was a Heisman finalist. Good person to talk to. No one better. But I think Narduzzi kind of let him down. But we'll get to that.
So the next point on the timeline is more of a footnote, and that's the actual Peach Bowl. Nick Patty broke his collarbone. Many say he would have had a better shot at being the starting quarterback in 2022 had he been able to ball out that whole game as he was, you know, through that first long drive. I would argue, and this is going to be a recurring theme as Nick Patty's name continues to pop up on this episode, I don't think he was going to be given a real chance.
I don't think he was given a real chance in the actual way the events played out. I don't think there was ever a true quarterback competition between Nick Patty and Keaton Slovis. I like to think that if Nick Patty balls out in that game, carries them to a Peach Bowl win, throws for 250 yards. He scores a rushing touchdown. He tosses a couple more. I like to hope that there is at least a real quarterback competition that offseason as opposed to the BS competition that we were sold on that, as I think we've all come to agree, that there was no real competition.
This is something that
no.
Whenever Narduzzi's career is over, hopefully he's here for a while and figures things out so we don't have to have this discussion. But I'd like to sit down with Pat Narduzzi at the end of his career and ask him about this. Like, Nick Patty, should you have started him? What if he did have a big Peach Bowl game? Is it a little bit different of a battle going into that next year? And it's a big what if, big butterfly effect moment. We obviously don't know what each of them looked like in camp and how fair of a shake Patty got, but you got to think with Nick Patty, season goes a little bit different.
So Pitt loses a BCS Bowl, and I don't think anyone was that upset. I think, you know, we knew no Kenny, not going to be, you know, as easy. Then when we lost our second string quarterback onto our third, no one really cared. But something else was brewing this entire time. And that was some issues with the potential for an in-house replacement offensive coordinator, specifically centered around a little known receivers coach at the time named Brennan Marion.
I think he was one of the first names brought up by Pitt fans. When we knew Mark Whipple was leaving, there was a section of Pitt fans that said they would never hire him. He was too inexperienced. They shouldn't hire him. And then I think there was a handful of us who were like, I don't know. He's a young offensive mind, up and coming. He was just in this system for a year. There's some continuity with the players. Why not? I don't think I was driving the Marion train, conducting the Marion train very long and trying to sell everyone on him being a good sell at the OC spot, but it did feel like that we had a potential future star in the coaching profession in our building, even at the time. With the performance of Addison that year, with some of the, you know, the recruiting, the he has his own go-go offense, like it felt like there was someone in that building that could be just a no-brainer home run.
Right now, it definitely looks bad because we're seeing, like, a couple hours ago that Arkansas, Notre Dame, Penn State are considering him for the offensive coordinator job. I think interviewed for the San Diego State head coaching job. So clearly skyrocketed. But at the time, I remember the flip side of the hire Marion, he's an up-and-comer, being we're coming off of an ACC championship. We have this loaded roster. Are we going to promote a guy whose only play calling experience came at Howard and William and Mary? Like, on one hand, could be diamond in the rough, could be superstar coordinator, but also you're trusting somebody with little play calling experience with a great team. We're already way up here. Shouldn't we be able to hire an offensive coordinator that has a lot of great experience in their career? Shouldn't we be able to attract a great coordinator this offseason? That was what I was thinking. I'd definitely probably have been fine with Marion. Wouldn't have been upset about it, but I thought Pitt could have just done a lot better, and we did not do better.
And I'm sure those were all considerations for head coach Pat Narduzzi, but I think what really lost Brennan Marion the job was his general behavior the entire month of December. Subtweeting the program, making posts on Instagram about never being given a shot. There was even I want to stress a rumor that I heard from that time period where the final straw was that Marion and Narduzzi were in a recruit's living room, and Marion like introduced himself as Pitt's new offensive coordinator. And when they got out of there, Narduzzi was like, dude, what the hell was that? We haven't even like discussed this, and you just introduce yourself to a literal recruit as our new OC. So I think there were very, very reasonable concerns about his maturity, his selflessness, how much he was willing to buy into an organization and not try to just climb the ladder for the next big job. And honestly, I still think and feel that way about Brennan Marion. I still think he's a shameless self-promoter, and that made me feel better when on December 31st, 2021, he took that job with Texas. But in hindsight, I don't I think I could have looked past it.
It's kind of funny because there's two groups of Pitt fans. There's some that maybe aren't as dialed into all like the little weird details of college football, and those are the ones that probably have a bad taste in their mouth from Brennan Marion, because they remember at midnight on a Tuesday he's tweeting at Big Game Boomer because he's not rated high enough on his wide receivers coach like power rankings, or he's subtweeting because he didn't get a look for the Colorado State offensive coordinator job. So there was a lot of that, a lot of drama, but in the grand scheme of things, could you have looked past it? Probably.
Those
who aren't as dialed in, they don't know about that whole side of what happened. And it's like, well, that guy was just a clear home run hire, wasn't he?
You just see the obvious talent. He's a young, charismatic dude who obviously knows the game. But I'm going to be following his career until he retires. I'm fascinated by him, especially that self-promoter aspect. And I'm especially going to be paying attention to where he ends up next, because I've been seeing some really impressive institutions and programs that apparently want him to be their offensive coordinator. But I will also say I have heard through the grapevine, less reliably than the other story I just told, that he is not shy about releasing his own, you know, pushing his own rumors out into the media. So he's not shy about that aspect of self-promotion, of getting his own stories in the headlines. I.e. might be DMing reporters saying, hey, this school, this school, this school, and this school all want me to write a story.
Seems like it's kind of been working out for him.
And honestly, if it does, credit to him.
UNLV 35.5 points a game this year, good for 19th in the FBS. UNLV's leading rusher on this season. Anyone want to take a guess?
Is it Vincent Davis?
You're damn right. 667 yards, not a mind-blowing number by any means. They actually had a stable of runners. Another guy, Jaden Thomas, ran for 500. Another guy, 450. So spread the ball around there. But they did run for 2,253 yards as a team this year. Narduzzi always says he wants to run the ball. All I'm saying.
So Brent Marion leaves, and in comes Frank Cignetti Jr. January 13th, 2022, the University of Pittsburgh announces that it has hired away Boston College's offensive coordinator and loyal son of Pittsburgh, Frank Cignetti.
Said Yinz.
Damn right he did.
This is something that makes me upset. It's whenever all the writing is on the wall and we lie to ourselves to ignore that writing on the wall, because at the time, Frank Cignetti, local ties, the theme of that offseason was he gets the ball to his playmakers, so his scheme will adapt to what we have. If we got a superstar receiver, we'll be throwing it to them all game. If we got tight ends, we'll hit the tight ends. If we got a good running game, we'll run the ball. That was what he did whenever he was here 12 years ago. Apparently not a whole lot has changed from his offense from 12 years ago. The writing on the wall in hindsight was this guy was kind of like a lame duck coach at Boston College who wasn't very good. Why are we excited about him?
Yeah, this was around the time where Coach Narduzzi started to go on like random podcasts run by car dealerships and say shit like, we passed the ball entirely too much last year.
We're running for 10 yards a pop in the ACC championship, and we want to throw it 40 times. Something like that. Some completely inaccurate stat that he quoted.
So that aside from Boston College being terrible under Cignetti, should have been a really big indicator that we were in for some terrible. But hey, you know, who cares if we run the ball more? We know Izzy's a stud. At the time, the three of us were the conductors of the Izzy hype train. You know, you have an incredible offensive line. Slovis gets injured a lot. That's his one knock. That's why he's regressing, not because he's actually regressing talent-wise. So if they just establish the run and you know, can take the pressure off of Slovis while also feeding Jordan Addison effectively. This could work.
Right. And there was some endorsements from his former players, some people that in the Pitt community, we take their word for it. Bill Stahl came out and said how great Frank Cignetti was for him as an offensive coordinator. Doran Dickerson endorsed him. Obviously, he had a huge year at Pitt under Cignetti. I feel like there's some other guys.
Yeah, I guess he did.
Yeah, something like that. But I feel like there's some other guys out there that came out and were like, yeah, Coach Sig was great. He was right here. And then we as Pitt fans allowed a team from 2009 who was good to like paint our picture of this guy coming back to Pittsburgh. Oh, he averaged 32 points a game when he was here in 2009. And we had those blinders on coming off a big season, riding high. And it's like, yeah, this guy, he's going to get the ball to his playmakers. We have a stud running back, stud receiver, stud tight end, and Gavin Bartholomew. It's going to be like 2009 all over again. In 2021 at Boston College, they scored just 24.7 points per game, which ranked 93rd in the country. At that point in time, since Cignetti had a Pitt offense that averaged 32.1 points per game in 2009, since then he failed to reach 30 points per game in a season at the college level. So we
were year? What year?
2009. So we were a decade removed from Cignetti having an offense. Now, there were some stints in the NFL, so he didn't coach for 12 years, but we were 12 years removed from him having a college offense that was really good.
Man, we just chalked it up to, yeah, that's Boston College. It's hard to do super well there. They beat us that one time, and they looked pretty good, so just come to Pitt and everything will be better. We'll put some duct tape on those holes, and everything will be fine.
So can we all agree that this is the turning point? This is the inflection point, not just the hiring of a terrible offensive coordinator to determine the offensive direction of the entire program, but the philosophical turn from Narduzzi that it is more important to protect the ball and not turn it over and keep your defense rested than it is to score more points than your opposition.
Narduzzi, I think, got cocky here. His head got a little big.
Oh, absolutely.
He's coming off a season where he wins 11 games. He wins an ACC championship. He's riding high, going to get given a brand new contract extension. And he had it in his head that, yeah, we were really good this year, but I'd like to be really good in a different way. And this was the first real action that he took to say, yeah, this was great and everything, but we still have really good players and we can be good, but playing more the way I'd like to do it.
In 2022, I sort of chalked it up to Keaton Slovis pretty early on didn't look great. And Izzy Abanikanda was like one of the best running backs in the country. So, yeah, I'm okay with giving him the ball a ton. But things just kind of spiraled, and that's not super sustainable, and you shouldn't be trying to become Iowa or Wisconsin.
Yeah, I mean, once again, I don't like to skip ahead too much here, but the first possession against West Virginia in the backyard brawl, we watched them come out in like a power eye for three straight plays. And David, I have to give you credit here. You were on it pretty early when Narduzzi started making the comments on random podcasts that he wants to run the ball more. He wants to run the ball more. And I was like, it'll probably just be closer, you know, 50-50, 60-40 than the 80-20 it was with Whipple's OC. There's just going to be a little more balance here. But you were on this very early. And I will say, when we came out to that game against West Virginia last year in 2022, a game that coming into the game, I think we all were like, well, this team's going to be really good. We're going to wax West Virginia. When I saw them come out in a power eye set three times in a row, I think I did a little look to my left, a look to my right, and was like, is this the game plan now? This is what we're going to try to do this year?
Well, we are skipping one very important occasion that might have tipped the scale even further in the We Are Nebraska Junior vein, and that is the Jordan Addison departure. Yes, Jordan Addison, the Biletnikoff winner, one of the best receivers in Pitt's history. We personally, everyone in Pittsburgh, but us personally, ripped that kid to shreds for transferring and you know, imposed all sorts of, you know, vile impulses and motivations on his decision. But at the end of the day, do we think it's possible that he went through spring ball, saw what Cignetti was cooking, and said, I have other places I can be?
I think it's more than possible. I think it's exactly what happened. I think you look at a guy who basically solidified himself as a sophomore, as a future first-round pick in the NFL draft, and he came back and was like, all I need to do this year is just be productive, have another good season. I'm the guy here. Everyone knows I'm the guy here. Every donor in Pitt Athletics knew he was the guy and was willing to work to, you know, appease him, to keep him around. But the difference between us as fans and Jordan Addison, other than the immense talent and all that, the awards, the accolades, he actually was able to see Frank Cignetti's offense with his own two eyes. He was able to play in it for a few weeks. He was able to catch passes from Keaton Slovis. And as much as we were talked up and drank the Kool-Aid on, oh, they look great, they look super effective, it's going to be great, it's not going to be that different than what we were doing last year, sure, Jordan Addison was out there running routes and was like, this really doesn't feel like catching passes from Kenny.
No, and I think a big piece of that is Narduzzi came out and said it multiple times in January, February. Schools were reaching out to Jordan Addison, and I think Jordan Addison was like, I'm good at Pitt. Like, I'm the guy here. As long as I don't lay an egg, I'll be day one, day two pick at worst. But then you fast forward a month or two after he's been there. The new OC is in there. They're installing the offense. He's running routes with Keaton Slovis, and that's whenever the portal becomes like a real, real thought for him. And then obviously once you throw your name out there at the very tail end of the deadline, schools are like, here's a blank check, basically. And the combination of the two of those things are definitely, I mean, no one would put themselves in Jordan Addison's shoes and say, you know what, I'm good here. I've got a lot of question marks about the offense I'm in. Millions of dollars on the line via NIL and the NFL draft next year, but yeah, I'll roll the dice.
And yeah, I will say though, and though I personally owe Jordan Addison an apology for a number of things I've said on and off mic, I will still go to my grave saying that there was a significant financial component to it, because when he hasn't even entered his name into the portal yet, but we know what school he's going to and a ballpark figure of how much they're paying him to come there, I have to think that money had something to do with it, regardless of the 2 days he spent touring like Alabama, Texas, and USC when he actually did enter the portal. He got that United Airlines bag while he was still on Pitt's roster, or at least was promised it while he was still on Pitt's roster, and that played a part in it. But not to the degree we were telling ourselves in the spring of 2022.
And can we just take a second to think about how insane that 48, 72 hours was when the news started to first matriculate and then he actually enters the portal, and then there's the visits. I mean, for better or for worse, Pitt was at the center of the college football universe for a few days.
Yeah, I remember in January and February, people would say, oh, I'm hearing that Marion might try to get him to go to Texas with them, and this school, that school, and they were kind of just shot down on me, like, that's just a stupid rumor. Jordan Addison went on Chris Peake's podcast a couple days ago and said that he's staying at Pitt. And then that, I was like, May 1st, whenever the news broke, it was around May 1st, whenever it's like, yeah, oh yeah, he's actually going to hit the portal, like right at the deadline. So that was wild. And it was like, ah, maybe he'll come back. Maybe he's just testing the waters. And then it was pretty clear, no, this is done.
I was babysitting my godson, and I'm very lucky he did not injure himself in the midst of my gross negligence, because I was just refreshing the lair every 10 seconds. Like,
yeah, I was actually working for like 12 hours prior to that and did not get a chance to look at my phone until probably around 10 p.m. And I saw hundreds and hundreds of messages, and there was like one message I saw that just said like, yeah, I heard he's getting like $1 million. And I'm like, what could this be about? And I clicked on that group chat and I was like, oh no, this can't be what this is about, right? And then just was dejected.
And then he was gone. And over that long summer, we still somehow convinced ourselves that things were going to be okay.
That it... Yeah, it was fine. We were going to replace him with a couple transfers. A couple guys would step up and we'd be able to counteract the loss of production with
a kid Jared from Akron. Means.
I was going to say a kid from Akron and a kid from Louisiana Tech.
It wasn't that Pitt made a bad OC hire or a bad pickup in the portal at quarterback. It was that USC has God's money and we don't. And, you know, that's just, you know, haves versus haves, not haves versus have nots. And it's always going to be that way, but we're going to be fine. And we're going to take the moral high road.
So fast forward through the summer, we feel good. We're approaching the season and 2022 season kicks off. Huge emotional win over the West Virginia Mountaineers. Then the next week we face, let me make sure I'm getting my timeline here.
Tennessee.
Keaton Slovis throws for a ton of yards in the first half, but gets knocked out with a concussion. Nick Patty just valiantly fights, and tries to rally, get us a win, but he was hobbled on a broken leg, or a sprained ankle. Might as well have been a broken leg the way he was limping around out there. Pitt has to take down Western Michigan. Full circle, Nate Yarnell, first start, last start on Saturday. And then where do we go from there? What's next?
I think, well, Georgia Tech.
Georgia Tech. That's right.
So I think we can.
Was that the next game?
I don't know if it was the next game, but it was the first loss. No, because there was that win against Rhode Island where Slovis played and he was bad and they wouldn't let him throw downfield and we all blamed it on him recovering from the concussion. But that should have been our first sign that he sucked.
Yeah, and the next week they lost to Georgia Tech.
So we can skip a lot of pain and suffering, reliving the 2022 season by just saying, we figured out quickly Slovis wasn't the guy. They rode Izzy's tails, and for some reason we just never got to see Nick Patty until the Sun Bowl. Some blame it on injury, some inside the program blame it on stubbornness from Pat Narduzzi, because there was apparently quite a contingent of the pit lock room that wanted to see Nick Patty, but we never did until it was too late. But what a shining moment in the sun that Sun Bowl was.
Yeah, the second big butterfly effect could have been, what if Nick Patty doesn't get hurt again? If he doesn't have that ankle injury that requires a surgery, he was not healthy until, I don't know if it's the Louisville game or the week after the Louisville game, because during that stretch, Slovis, it was apparent he was not good. He was playing poorly. We kept saying week after week, oh, the first half against Tennessee. And that never came. So you wonder if Nick Patty never got hurt, then maybe the season is still safe. Maybe they can still salvage something, and halfway through Georgia Tech, Narduzzi says, well, Nick Patty's healthy on the sideline. Go out there and gut us to victory here. And maybe he plays well and plays it out the rest of the year. But there was no option to turn to until it was like, well, here we are and we're winning games. So you can't just keep trotting along.
We won 9 games, including the last 5.
Yeah.
And at the time, it was like, wow, this season could have been even better.
The years are going to be kind to that team, because we're going to see 9 wins. We're going to see a 5-game streak. But that is an 11-win team if they don't lose to 2 dog shit opponents. Get embarrassed. They were down 2 scores late against both of those teams. Garbage. It was garbage time with 8 minutes left on the clock. That's an exaggeration, but they were never really in those games. And we're going to look back on those 9 wins and say, oh, it was still a pretty workable team. That should have been an 11-win team. That defense, that running game, the way Jared Wayne played, we were a switch to Nick Patty away from an 11-win team. We would have been back. Despite a loss to North Carolina, we still would have beaten them in the ACC standings and been back in Charlotte for a second year in a row.
With wins over Louisville and Georgia Tech, correct?
With wins over Louisville and Georgia Tech.
Gotcha. Just clarifying. Okay. So I know we kind of went through that whole year there, but the Nick Patty Slovis dynamic is essentially what we're calling another mishap, another mistake, another mishandling, a whole lot of misses by Pat Narduzzi and company.
Absolutely. And by the time Nick Patty was able to show that he was the guy, that he should have been in there the entire season, that, you know, he's made us some different stuff, it was already too late, because on December 5th, 2022, Phil Dracovic announces that he is joining the Pitt Panthers program.
So this is, we're looking at almost a full month, not a full month, 25 days before the Peach Bowl. So Nick Patty already is well aware, before the Sun Bowl, I said the Peach Bowl, before the Sun Bowl, Nick Patty is well aware that Narduzzi has gone fishing in the portal again to go get another transfer quarterback. So maybe a little different from the Peach Bowl year, but this year, before the Sun Bowl, Nick Patty knows that this is going to be his last game in a Panther uniform, because he knows for damn sure that he already went through the facade of getting a quarterback competition once. He wasn't going to do it again.
Yeah, absolutely. At least when we brought in Slovis, there was, you know, the illusion that it was going to be a quarterback competition and that Slovis was being brought in to compete with Nick Patty for that spot. There was no such illusion when Phil was brought in to compete with Keaton. And then Keaton left. That was Phil's job the whole time.
They were well aware that Keaton Slovis was gone. They weren't going to bring in Phil Dracovic if Keaton was staying.
No.
That was not going to be, they were both not going to be in the roster. There's no way they knew.
That was the intention.
No.
They said that. I don't believe that for a second.
Narduzzi coming out and halfway out the door.
Sorry, I believe my coach. I'm sorry.
You're going to say that right now after they just finished up a 3-9 season?
Dudes, no.
Dudes love to drop that in an interview that, oh, we wanted him to come and compete, but Keaton didn't want to do that. Get the fuck out of here.
I do acknowledge it's far-fetched, but I will say I do genuinely believe the plan was for him to come in and compete, and if Keaton left as a result, they just didn't give a shit. Because they were also bringing in Vair.
Yeah, I don't know. You 6-year guy, previously played for your offensive coordinator. Everyone has been told that the Keaton doesn't fit Cignetti's offense. And, oh, yeah, the kid's from Pittsburgh, and he's a high school football legend from these parts. Obviously, Keaton left, and they said there was going to, if you would have stuck around, we would have had a quarterback competition. Come on.
No, Keaton
might not be great at football. He ain't stupid.
Pitt definitely knew that Phil Dracovic was coming here well before the portal opened. That had to have been like set in stone.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we're getting this guy. And then Slovis is like, well, I am not going to get a fair shot here, and I'm kind of like not doing well, so might as well bounce. And it seemed like Nick Patty was like, yeah, I'm emptying the chamber.
Yeah.
I'm kind of done with playing college football, especially with the hand that I'm being dealt right now.
Regardless of our argument, scenario A or scenario B, Nick Patty was not a part of either of them. So he decided to forego his final year of eligibility and enter the private sector.
It would be hilarious if we had a full off season of Slovis versus Dracovic in camp. Could you imagine that? It's like, oh, Phil threw a lot of ducks today, but so did Slovis, who threw less ducks.
Imagine week one comes around. Imagine the conversations that Pitt fans would have had. We don't want that pretty boy playing quarterback for us. We want our Pittsburgh homegrown Western PA football legend. And then after, how long would it have taken into the Cincinnati game for people to be chanting for Slovis?
He just won 8 games for us last year. I guess it would have been maybe 9 if he played the Sun Bowl. Who knows?
He wasn't winning that Sun Bowl.
Correct. But there's a scenario where it's like, oh, he just did all this for us last year. That would have been a hilarious dynamic. We don't have to pretend that would have ever happened because it would have been painful.
Correct. So Slovis is a one and done at Pittsburgh. He ends up being better than all the other guys they were looking at in the portal, but still terrible. Weird fever dream, the Keaton Slovis era. And now we have Phil Dracovic. What were your guys' initial thoughts when we got Phil?
So the angel on my one shoulder said, he's in Cignetti's offense. The team around him is good enough. We can rely on Hammond. The whole run game, open up the pass game to Bart and Bob and Cignetti. They're boys. He had a good year at Boston College that one time. But the devil on my other shoulder was saying, this is just another injury-prone quarterback who lost their job and are leaving for the portal.
And showed significant signs of regression year after year after year. We did not learn our lesson from Slovis. Slovis was exactly who we should have thought he was, and we didn't take that knowledge and carry it with us into the following year.
No, we drank the Kool-Aid hard.
I'll tell you what my exact thought was, and it was my thought process for basically the entire offseason. He can't be worse than Slovis.
Yeah.
He played under Cignetti. He's been decent before. I was like, it's cool. He's the hometown kid. Can't be worse than Slovis. Boy, was I wrong.
Yeah, I think we all trained ourselves to think that Sun Bowl team was the That game was in 2022, but that was the 2023 Pitt Panthers. All of the guys that were leaving had already left, already entered the draft, already entered the portal, and we are just plugging in Phil for Nick Patty. Can Phil be as good as Nick Patty or better? If yes, this is a ranked football team.
It's nail on the head.
Even if he was bad at Boston College, which in hindsight should have been a red flag.
Yeah, in hindsight, getting a mediocre coordinator and mediocre quarterback from Boston College.
From a bad program.
Yeah, weird how that didn't turn out to be just a great... Stop drinking the Kool-Aid. I'm done.
So before we fully transition to the 2023 here...
What were we thinking?
We weren't. We were not. We are the loyal sons, not the, like, thoughtful and pragmatic sons.
No, we're the objective sons. From here on out, I'm not going to let a two-game stretch 2 years ago sway me. For at least another 2 or 3 months.
There are sons is what we should be called.
The abject moron sons. But before I do want to talk about a few more things from that December, because I do not think that going out and getting Dracovic and getting Veyer and pushing out Patty were the only terrible personnel decisions. Actually, I'm not going to knock the Veyer thing. I'm not sure what's going to become of that. We can save that for the end. But Phil was not the only roster mismanagement from that time period. I haven't heard a ton of people talking about this and blaming this for how bad this football team is, but have you guys ever stopped and thought about how many guys with eligibility we held the door open for to leave in December of 2022?
Would have been nice to keep a couple guys, but I think at the time, couldn't blame them. There's young, promising guys behind them. I know you'll name them all off here. Jared Wayne, Haba, Brandon Hill, Hallett, John Morgan. But it's like, yeah, they might be a little bit better, but we'll be okay.
Yeah, and I know I dropped Hallett's name on here.
I don't think he had eligibility.
He didn't have any eligibility, but the rest of those guys did at least have a year.
Pitt pushed out, or maybe let's give them the benefit of the doubt. They didn't push them out. They allowed them to walk. But think about this year and think about the way the passing game looked, the way the defensive line looked, the way our safeties looked. And we were happy to let Jared Wayne and Haba and Brandon Hill and John Morgan walk out the door.
We weren't happy about them leaving. They,
I will say,
we weren't unhappy. We didn't.
Jared Wayne.
Everyone wanted Jared Wayne back.
I think everyone saluted him and said thank you for your service.
And so Brandon Hill got drafted. I don't think we can hold that against him. It's like, if you're going to be selected in the NFL draft,
but
smart.
But in the new world of NIL, could there have been some payments, maybe a little more aggressively to keep him around? I'm not saying that they should have broken the bank for Brandon Hill. I'm just saying, like David was saying, I do think he probably leaves unless they come up with a very strong offer, maybe a stronger offer than you're willing to offer Brandon Hill. He didn't exactly light the world on fire in 2022. But
he was very good, but
maybe not a guy that you're going to drop a bag to keep around when you think you have solid safeties behind you. I think you would look more towards the John Morgans and the Habas, because there's been this idea that these guys have been here forever and that we have a ton of talent on the defensive line behind them. And John Morgan, I mean, good for him. I'm sure he went and got paid in the portal. And I don't think there was probably a ton of begging being done to keep him around.
But in hindsight, And that's the whole point of this. In hindsight, Hallett, he didn't have any years left, but he's on a practice squad. Brendan Hill, practice squad. Jared Wayne, Canadian League. Haba, I have no clue. John Morgan, 2 sacks and 8 solo tackles on a 4-8 Arkansas Razorbacks. So
Haba's in the CFL, by the way.
Haba also playing Canadian football. So these guys, all of them with the exception of Hallett, left eligibility on the table. Pat Narduzzi could have kept them in the football program and allowed them to go at positions of desperate need.
I don't know if this makes much of a difference. Aside Jared Wayne, I think we could have paid him somehow to stay through NIL. I think that would have made a difference, maybe having another receiver. Other than that, John Morgan had 2 sacks this year. Big whoop. Haba, I think he underperformed his last year. He got hurt all the time. I don't think anyone was like, we need Haba back so bad or else we're screwed. I think we're just excited to see the next wave of guys.
Yeah, and we were also excited to get Phil Jurkovic.
Okay, I don't think that is bad. That was a bad thing. I don't think keeping the other guys would have changed anything at all. I think this is the least consequential.
My point is, at the time, these are all things that we were cool with or excited about because of our massive Kool-Aid intake. You can't tell me that John Morgan or Haba wouldn't have made this team better this year.
Did they win another game with those two?
No.
Yes.
I don't know. Which one?
John Morgan had 2 sacks. That's less than Bam Brema.
Haba had 2.5 his last year.
I don't know what kind of scheme Arkansas is running, but I have a feeling that John Morgan, who at least made the occasional impact with Charlie Partridge, would continue to do so given another year and would have been better than Nate Temple or Bam Brema.
Yeah, I'd obviously prefer if the guys behind them who we were excited about. I mean, John Morgan said whenever he left, I'm leaving, I'm doing what's best for me, and it's also great for the guys behind me. When he said that, I assumed Nakai Johnson could get on the field at some point. But apparently that's not the case. End of the day, I don't think keeping either of those guys changes much of anything.
But it's... You can look at those individual pieces and say, oh, what's he going to do? What's he going to do? I'm looking at the general theme, yes, with the benefit of hindsight, that something was in the water in the Pitt facility in December of 2022 that made, you know, Pat Narduzzi looking at his roster with drunk goggles making decisions.
I think on the other hand, Pitt may have been hurt by retaining so many guys for the COVID year. We brought so many guys back. The young guys never got any experience. And now it's like, you have to play now and you never even got any playing time before because John Morgan and was playing for 3 years and you were just riding pine, never sniffing the field. So we got great fortunes for Kenny Pickett coming back because of all of that. All that depth we may have lost, experience lost, could have played a factor too.
Okay. I get your point, and it's a good one. But at best, Narduzzi and company still took a gamble and lost convincingly, believing that those guys underneath proven starters were going to show up and be dogs.
Can I just... I don't want this to become a whole thing about the defensive line and the what direction they're... We lost Kalijah Kancey and we weren't keeping him. And I would argue that is the biggest reason why the defensive line looked different this year, is because for the first time in like 6 years, we didn't have an All-American playing D-tackle.
And Savasia Dennis 4 feet behind him.
Oh yeah, that doesn't help.
So I get you. It does go back to what we said about the Narduzzi going and getting Cignetti thing. It's like, oh, I want to win my way. We're good enough. We can just win my way. Similar with these guys. Oh, we're good enough. We have good enough players in the building. We don't need to keep these guys around. I'll give you that. But I do also agree with Squid. That was probably the least consequential of the things we've discussed. But there is it just kind of stays with a consistent theme of we're fine, we're good. We've risen the floor of this program. We've brought the talent level up to a certain level that we can compete in this conference, and we're going to be one of the best teams in this conference regardless. We've built something to last.
Hubris and bad personnel decisions are probably going to be the two biggest themes of this episode. So that brings us to the 2023 season, where I think the personnel decisions were the most glaringly bad. There were some defensible things, letting some older defensive ends go because you think you have some young guys underneath them that can shine. Same at receiver, same at safety. But then we get to the 2023 season and we see just head-scratching decision after head-scratching decision. Sebo over Rodney Hammond. Phil Djurkovic over Christian Vayer. Christian Vayer over Nate Yarnell. Anybody with a pulse that can run a route over Gavin Bartholomew.
Quarterback is where we start full circle on the Nick Patty. Keaton Slovis knew they didn't have a chance to be the starters.
How did I not mention Nick Patty in my whole spiel about not keeping guys with eligibility? But we already went over why he wasn't staying, so I won't beat that to death.
So Djurkovic is hand wrapped the starting quarterback position the moment he signs on the dotted line on a silver platter. You're our guy. You're going to be our starter. And then it seemed like there was no willingness to move off of that stance until it became so clearly apparent that he was not good enough to do it, that we were staring down the barrel of winning a single game for the 2023 season. Like, it got to historical levels of bad quarterback play before they pulled the plug.
I'm almost glad that Christian Vayer did not continue looking amazing, as crazy as that sounds. Not really, but you know what I mean. If he continued to look amazing, it would be so much more infuriating as to why Djurkovic got the nod as long as he did. Vayer came back down to earth for whatever reasons, and now we're on Nate Yarnell, and it's like, wow, he looks the best out of all of them. What even was this season? How do we evaluate quarterbacks? I don't know what to believe. Obviously, the Djurkovic thing was loyalty, perhaps NIL money. Clearly didn't have it. Could have told you that after six quarters of football, maybe less. But after that, I don't know what to think. I don't know how we trust. Well, we don't have to trust Cignetti to make any more personnel decisions, but man, they've got to do something about the quarterback room.
I think it's very funny that you would rather arrive at the fact that, oh, Dews and Cignetti weren't that bad at evaluating quarterbacks. You'd rather take that over, like,
having a good quarterback?
Well, having a good quarterback, but also, like, the implication of Vayer also being bad is, like, oh, so they're just bad at picking portal quarterbacks. They're bad at teaching guys and growing them within a system of producing and men.
No matter how you cut it, it's not good. Whether it's we're getting guys that aren't good, we can't pick the right guys. Like I said, no matter how you slice it up.
It's a little bit of everything.
It probably was everything. It's not one or the other. Is Nate Yarnell actually as decent as he's looked? I don't know.
Is he the beneficiary of playing some easier competition than the Bay Area played? I don't know. All I know is they've played three quarterbacks this year, and each time they've stepped down the depth chart, that guy's looked a little better. So
and also, they had a terrible offensive coordinator. I don't think coordinator's doing anybody any favors. We talked about how all season this offense had no identity. One game they're trying to run the ball 50 times. The next they're throwing 17 jump balls to Bub Means. It was pretty clear they had no answers and were just kind of throwing shit at the wall and seeing what stuck.
Yeah, and that's the point I wanted to get to, Squid, is even, well, Dracovic, I feel like he's probably a broken quarterback at this point. We can see that. But there is obviously much larger issues when you, if bad quarterback play, whatever. But they didn't go 6-6 this year. They didn't go 5-7. They went 3-9. There are terrible Power 5 quarterbacks who win six games. Syracuse went 6-6 this year. Boston College went 6-6. I mean, Cassianos isn't a bum, but I mean, Pitt made him look pretty average and they won three games. They won three games once again. I mean, it's with the schedule they had and the opportunities they had and the talent they had allegedly stockpiled to only win three games is evidence of something more systemically wrong. And maybe, I don't know, maybe a change in leadership. I'm not saying Narduzzi, but some of those other coaching positions, something that, I mean, 3-9 is clean house, not clean house territory. It's like clean house, figure out what parts of the house you want to leave. But this season, and we walked through all these steps since 2021, is just, it's the culmination of a lot of really bad decisions along the way.
I wanted to say this at the beginning of the episode, whenever we talked about Pitt getting to that apex of the ACC championship game. I used to always say, any team, if you have a favorable schedule and a pretty good quarterback, you can win 10 games. I kept saying 2018, Syracuse won 10 games with Eric Dungy. I'm like, if Syracuse can win 10 games, why can't we? Syracuse has obviously not capitalized on that. They went 5-7, 1-10, 5-7, 7-6, and 6-6 ever since, and they fired their head coach. I thought Pitt. Syracuse, hard to win there. That's not a football school. Try recruiting to Syracuse, can't do it. Pitt, we're different, though. We get to 10 wins. We can hover around that area longer because of more Pitt, more resources. We already got this great foundation. We've been recruiting better. But look at us now. We're following that same trend of up to 10, 9, 3. Now, how quickly can we bounce back? Can we bounce back? That's where we're at now.
Maybe it's because I played too much like NCAA football 2010 growing up. But my toxic trait is thinking that it's not actually all that hard to build and sustain a college football program. Because in theory, what? You win a couple games, and then you leverage that to get better recruits. You say, hey, look, we won a couple games. Like, come play at our school. And then they come play at your school and they're a little better than the players that you had. So you win a couple more games and then you go to new recruits and you say, hey, do you see those games we won? You should come play here and we can win more games. And then they come and they're better than the players that left. And, you know, that snowballs and then more people come to your games, more people give you money. You use that money to improve your facilities and get better players. And then you just keep getting better and better players and winning more and more games. And then the cycle.
And before you know it, you just turned Memphis into Alabama in a matter of 4 years.
Exactly.
Can't be that hard.
It can't be that hard.
I've done it as a child in a video game, so.
But it turns out, even if you do that, the implied is that the players that you turn around and say, hey, look at those wins, don't you want to be a part of it? You also have to be sure that those kids are actually good at football.
And those people you hire to coach them up are good at coaching.
So maybe it's a little bit more complicated than that, but still, and I said it too much in 2022, and I was being alarmist then, but it turns out you're never wrong, just early. Pitt squandered such an unbelievable opportunity to solidify itself in the upper middle tier of college football. They run back 2022 with Nick Patty. And we aren't, I sincerely believe we are not talking about a 3-9 season right now. This is a program with juice, with multiple 10-win seasons. You don't no Nick Patty, no worries. Just don't hire Frank Cignetti. Same situation. I am afraid to say this because it's going to hurt all of my insides. But everything that we built, everything that Pat Narduzzi built, I think might be gone. I think the window is closed. And even though we're doing a great job thus far of hanging on to the recruits that we got, I don't see this team crawling back to where it was in 2021 anytime soon.
I'm not going to call you an alarmist because it could very well happen.
We went 3-9. It. I'm going to reiterate that point again.
Mm-hmm. 3-9. What did we say? The floor was 7 wins now? Maybe 8? 7 if we're bad?
Seven was a bad year.
If we were 6-6, I would be like, all right, pump the brakes, save it. No, we went 3-9, but proceeds with.
It's never been easier to turn a program around, ever. So, all you need is a quarterback. All you need is a good play caller. Everyone around you has got to be pretty decent. Do we have a quarterback like that? No. Do I trust Pat Narduzzi to find a quarterback like that in the portal? Probably not. But it is possible, and I don't think we're going to be down here forever. Might take a couple years to chip away to get back up to where that's within reach, but right now was the most pivotal time. We're going to talk about offensive coordinators. We don't have one right now. We need one, and we need one to be good very badly, because if we don't get a good coordinator, if we keep doing more of the same, then I do think this is back to square one with Pat Narduzzi.
Pat Narduzzi's offensive coordinator hire this offseason will determine the trajectory of the Pitt program for the next 5 to 10 years, and will likely determine whether he lasts and sticks out this current contract he has with them through 2030. I mean, 7 years, that's an eternity in college football, 6 years, mm-hmm. I guess, at this point. But this next OC has to be competent, has to be able to put points on the board. I'm hoping it's someone who plays a little more modern style of college football, air the ball out a little bit, spread people out. If we bring in a Big Ten coordinator who wants to run the ball 40 times a game, I think you can
will not fall for it.
I think you can just about call it on Narduzzi.
I think a very eye-opening thing was seeing Indiana fire Tom Allen, who was, I don't know, was he their best coach ever? I don't know. Has Indiana ever been good outside of that, like, flash in the pan with him? They paid $20 million to fire him. Indiana football.
That's a basketball state.
Narduzzi's safe because of his contract, and, like, he'll be fine. If we're, like, okay, they won't fire him because of a buyout. I don't know now. College football. High stakes. Anyone's willing to pay up?
We just have to hope he can learn from his mistakes, and he's a guy who's shown a few examples of the fact that he doesn't really learn from his mistakes, and he's a very stubborn guy. Pat Narduzzi, for your own sake, you need to look at the last 2 years and say, what did I do wrong, and how can I fix it? You need to do an about face. I don't give a fuck about time of possession. Nobody in the stands, at least the people who have the balls to show up to Acrisure in the last year, none of them care how much rest the defense gets or the balance of run and pass. You know what keeps your defense off the field? Sustaining drives. You know what wins football games? Scoring points. Head out of ass, get us a young, decent coordinator, and I do not give a shit if you think he's going to leave in 2 years for a better job. I'd rather that than some old dude you have to fire in 2 years anyway.
Yeah, or that you don't get along with and chase him off after a good season.
They won't get along. I think we can safely assume that.
Please, Pat, we're begging you. Get this right. We need it. Pitt football needs it. Pitt fans need it.
So we've just unearthed like a lot of trauma. And we've covered a lot of things. And I think we're all in a worse place now than when we hit record. Do you guys have any closing thoughts, optimistic or not? Anything we missed? Maybe something to leave us on a high note? I don't know, anything.
No, I think the list of offensive coordinator names that have been floated have been very underwhelming. So hopefully we get something out of left field in the next couple of weeks and it's somebody good.
We should have, I wish we might need to workshop this offline a little bit, but the scale for like Capel's job security versus Narduzzi's job security. And I remember thinking like, oh, Capel's been so bad, like Narduzzi will never have to be worried about getting fired. But that, that scale now
just dropped like a elephant on one side of it. Completely flip-flop.
I would have told you 2 years ago that, hey, in 2 years, Jeff Capel's seat will be cooler than Narduzzi's. I don't think you would have believed me. But hey, that's where we are. That's how things change. How quickly things can change. Who knows when they'll hire an OC? I mean, the portal's coming up. I'm thinking you'll want to have a guy pretty soon for when they start hitting the portal. So this could move quicker than we can cover here. Who knows? Maybe next time we're recording, we're talking about new OC Mark Whipple.
I mean, we're not used to the season being over this early. We get a head start in a OC.
Yeah.
Great. Awesome.
Hit the portal. Open up the checkbooks.
Chris Bickle, if you're listening, and I know you are, just buy Sean Lewis a house in Squirrel Hill or something. Like, please swing for the fences. I know you've been burnt a couple times in the last year alone, but we're kind of counting on you.
Well, this should be a fun off season. If for nothing else, we get to watch the basketball team for a little bit. But, yeah, I say we wrap it up here, fellas.
Yep, we'll be back later this week to talk about hoops. Tough one against Florida, but the bounce back. Hopefully, by the time you listen to this, we have beaten Missouri. But until then, just hang tight.
It's going to be okay.
The volleyball team's a one seed.
Kenny's awesome again.
I don't really like winter, but maybe you like skiing.
Kenny Pickett.
Cool. Yeah.
I just saw another mock draft with Carlton Carrington going top 10.
Beautiful. There we go.
As always, hail, loyal sons of Pittsburgh.